This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
In places like Lesotho and Zambia, where you have a significant presence of Chinese expats, you know, in Uganda and other places, there's a sense that they're displacing African labor.
That's Paul Nantuya, a specialist in Africa-China ties at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington. We'll have the latest on the BRICS summit coming up. Also, Zimbabwe's main opposition hits a brick wall 5 days before the elections. South African authorities struggle to control an upsurge in violence in the minibus taxi industry. And Egypt's parliament approves a law giving senior military officers immunity from prosecution for any actions taken during unrest that followed the ouster of President Mohamed Morsi. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, it's 5 days before Zimbabwe's elections and the main opposition has hit a brick wall in getting its demands addressed. Today, the executive members within the opposition met to consider a way forward. Reporter Kuzayi Zvinovashi has details.
Today's press briefing by MDC Alliance presidential candidate Nelson Chamisa took place hours later than scheduled. The MDC party secretary general, Douglas Monzora, calmed the frustrated journalists by telling them that Chamisa was in a meeting with the executive. The outcome would determine if the opposition alliance would go through with the election or boycott. Chamisa addressed the media after the meeting.
Contrary to the perception that we are going to boycott the election, we can't boycott our victory. We can't boycott our mandate. We can't boycott the clear mandate we have been given by the people of Zimbabwe.
This comes just as the alliance hit a brick wall when police refused to authorize planned vigils outside Zimbabwe Electoral Commission offices across the country in a fresh bid to pressure the commission. Chamisa's demands focus on transparency in the commission's operation. These include a voter's roll with pictures, monitoring of the printing of the ballot paper, and many other issues. In recent weeks, Chamisa has said while they will not boycott the election, there will be no balloting without reforms.
I'm a leader who is democratic. I consult those whom I lead. I pushed for the reforms. We are still pushing for the reforms. Even if the reforms are not there, my view is that I would not accept anything less than the reforms. But the view of the people is that Mr. Chamisa, lead us to Canaan, lead us to victory, lead us to a new Zimbabwe.
Munyara Dzidodo is the editor of Open Parli, an online publication that covers parliament and other political developments.
I think MDC is caught in between a rock and a hard place. The elections provisionally, by the law of the land, says that nothing can stop these elections from happening. It's a good thing that they've decided to go forth and participate. It's good for them that they go into this election with a mobilized base that can be ready to defend the vote if need be.
Former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, who led a delegation of the elders in the country, recently said politicians should not make unreasonable demands. Although he did not mention names, the state media and other critics feel he was speaking about Chamisa. The Commonwealth Observer Mission here says it wants all political parties to be treated fairly, and there is nothing like unreasonable demands in the build-up to an election. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinovashi from Harare.
Zimbabwe's July 30th elections are generally expected to be a slugfest between the two major political parties, the ruling ZANU-PF and the MDC alliance, led by Nelson Chamisa. Over 130 political parties are contesting in these elections, which have 23 presidential candidates. One of the most controversial parties is the Mwakazi Republican Party, or MRP. It operates more or less like a pressure group, fronting the causes of what it calls the marginalized people of Matabeleland. VOA correspondent Adi Gondo has more from Bulawayo.
Formed in 2013, the Mtuagazi Republican Party is one of the most vocal and controversial parties in Zimbabwean politics. It pushes for the division of Zimbabwe along ethnic lines. Party members want a separate state of Mtwakazi forged out of what is now called Midlands and Matabele land. It mobilizes members using a variety of grievances, led by what's known as the Gukurahundi massacres in the region in the 1980s. During that period, thousands of people, mostly Ndebele speakers, died as ZANU-PF paged what it saw as internal threats. MRP also complains that the ruling ZANU-PF party and the dominant Shona community marginalize people in Matabeleland when it comes to employment and political power. Butler Tambo, a political analyst, says that while as a whole, Zimbabweans do not want to see voters drawn along ethnic lines, the MRP's tactics have some appeal in the region.
What we have to notice about the Mtwakazi way of campaigning, pulling voters along ethnic lines, is something that we are not in support of as Zimbabweans. But I think what we should look at mostly are the root causes of why they have to campaign along those tribal or ethnic lines. I think it is mostly because people in Matabeleland, they felt that they would be marginalized from Zimbabwe. So now these are now people who are having an agenda that is stronger than the national agenda, where people believe that they should also be considered in whatever happens in Zimbabwe. But not only that, but these are people who are now saying that they do not want to be part of Zimbabwe. But I think it's a very difficult agenda to push, and I do not necessarily see them succeeding.
Some political analysts see the MRP strategy as potentially dangerous given the track record in African politics with such events as the Rwandan genocide. Mike Omtlanga, with the Leaders for Africa Network, sees ethnic hatred driving the MRP platform. He says the party is dominated by old hatreds because of the Gukurahundi, which, he says, was more about politics than ethnicity.
But tribe found itself being part of political dissent. Hence, Mtwakazi Republic Party as a secessionist group is a reactionary group that is seeking to address past horrors in a political manner. Their remedy for that problem is misdirected because it doesn't really address the problem.
MRP leader Nkonde Simoyo, however, says the only way to solve the problem of marginalization is secession.
We have tried to coexist with people whom I would call our neighbors from Mashonaland, but each and every time they treat us as a second-class citizens, which is a realization by them that we don't belong to this country as per the setup of 1980 and probably as from 1923. But we feel that if this arrangement was to be done in a correct manner, it's a matter of saying, okay, let them stay where they are, and we stay where they are, and we coexist as neighbors. And we are simply saying this thing should be redressed peacefully.
MRP has 34 National Assembly candidates and 96 council candidates. Its leaders are hoping that with this election, they will have laid the ground for secession in the future. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
This year's summit of the BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, began today with an expression of concern about the trade war brewing between the United States and BRICS' wealthiest member, China. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
BRICS admitted South Africa in 2010 as part of the bloc's aim of leveling the global playing field by representing non-traditional powers. Leaders say that goal is now more important than ever, given the growth of protectionist trade policies and politics around the globe. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa issued strong words of concern at the opening of the summit in Johannesburg on Wednesday.
We are meeting here, ladies and gentlemen, at a time when the multilateral trading system is facing unprecedented challenges. We are concerned by the rise in unilateral measures that are incompatible with World Trade Organization rules, and we are worried about the impact of these measures, especially as they impact developing countries and economies. These developments call for thorough discussion on the role of trade in growing and in promoting sustainable development, particularly inclusive growth.
To that end, Ramaphosa said the bloc's development bank has, since its establishment in 2014, issued $5.1 billion in loans to foster development projects. On the eve of the summit, Ramaphosa met with Chinese President Xi Jinping. China has been attempting to shore up its international relationships amid U.S. President Donald Trump's threat to impose tariffs on Chinese goods. But as South African Trade and Industry Minister Rob Davis pointed out in a business-oriented pre-summit meeting, even within BRICS, trade is not balanced. South Africa is the newest and smallest member of BRICS, he said, but invests more than it gets back.
If we look at the investment relationship, I think we can see that there has been less progress. The figure that we have recorded, nearly $18 billion, $17.8 billion, that was the inflow of BRICS investment into the South African economy between 2003 and 2017. But actually, South Africa, between 2001 and 2016, invested $68 billion, a larger sum, in other BRICS countries.
With outside threats looming large, analyst Luanda Mpungose says things are changing. This year, she said, it's notable that BRICS has extended a hand beyond just South Africa.
Something that's different about BRICS this year, specifically South Africa as a host country, is that this initiative not only is about the BRICS member countries, the five countries, but actually we've seen an outreach of neighborhood countries being invited. So this is taking along the Africa developmental agenda and bringing it into the BRICS agenda. Countries like Rwanda, like Senegal, like Togo have been invited to come and attend.
The summit continues through Friday. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
South African authorities are struggling to control an upsurge in violence in the minibus taxi industry. The country is reeling after several deadly attacks. Two drivers have died in the past few days as a result of feuding industry associations. This past weekend, 11 people linked to a Gauteng taxi association were slain in KwaZulu-Natal. The victims were traveling home from a funeral when they were attacked. The dispute centers around lucrative transport routes. Police were given a 72-hour deadline to make arrests, but that time is quickly running out. Nadia Same reports from Johannesburg.
The South African Parliament is warning that violence has reached crisis levels. In the past few days alone, 13 taxi drivers have been murdered as a result of rivalry. It's been a terrifying time for commuters, millions of whom rely on taxis to get around. Theo Malele from the National Taxi Alliance, which represents drivers, explains the problems.
The reasons are precipitated by, oversaturation of routes, where more than one association have been given the right to operate a particular route, and also they could be of a personal nature amongst two people in a particular association, while some may be about two different associations fighting over a route.
In an incident in KwaZulu-Natal this past weekend, 11 people died on the scene when the vehicle they were traveling in was ambushed by an unknown number of gunmen. Another person later died in hospital. Their vehicle was riddled with 255 bullet holes. Ironically, they were traveling home from the funeral of a driver who was also killed in taxi violence. South Africans have taken to social media expressing shock at the level of conflict and brazen nature of the crimes. Malele says his association has made recommendations to the government before in a bid to end the clashes, but he says the suggestions are gathering dust.
South African government must actually hold the ministers of transport accountable for all activities pertaining to the transport industry. Even the MECs in provinces like Gauteng, they should also get off their comfort zones and roll up their sleeves and begin to work with the industry to make sure that we nip this in the bud. We appreciate that transformation has to begin with us, but those that lead us must also show us the way and begin not to behave like demigods and do what is expected of them.
Police are now appealing to the public for assistance, which may lead to the arrest of the perpetrators of the bloodshed. But several commuters at taxi ranks around Gauteng say they're terrified of speaking out as they fear for their lives. They also say they have no other reliable way of getting to work and home. For VOA, I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Twenty minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Zimbabwe's main opposition hits a brick wall 5 days before the elections. This year's summit of the BRICS nations is an expression of concern with the trade war between the U.S. and China. And South African authorities struggle to control an upsurge in violence in the minibus taxi industry. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The Egyptian parliament has approved a law giving senior military officers immunity from prosecution for any actions taken during the unrest that followed the ouster of President Mohamed Morsi between July 2013 and June 2014. The Speaker of Parliament says if this is a discriminatory law, then it is a positive one that was discussed by legislators and has been approved on behalf of the Egyptian people. Mohamed Anwar al-Sadat is the former head of Parliament's Human Rights Committee. He told VOA's senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi that Egyptians are wondering why the law was passed.
I have raised a lot of question marks, which most of Egyptians who are following the politics, you know, intellectuals, party leaders, I was actually somehow also surprised, like many others, why we are doing this now, this kind of immunity. What does it mean for those who we don't know the names? Actually, the names has to be submitted by the president personally. For those, let's say, high-ranking officers from this time, as you mentioned, until the parliament was in sessions, or let's say was elected. So it's big question mark. Nobody knows exactly what is behind, who have been requesting this, why we are doing this.
So why should these senior officers need immunity if they did not commit any wrongdoing?
Any military officer or even a police officer who have been part of this, if they were doing what they have to do according to the law, based on true justice, I don't see reasons why should we immune them. They are dealing with a certain responsibility. So it's, again, a big question mark.
Speaker of the Egyptian Parliament said if this was a discriminatory law, then it is a positive discrimination that was discussed in the parliament and got approved on behalf of the Egyptian people. Is that a reasonable justification?
Of course not. And I don't see this is a positive discrimination. I see very clear discrimination. To my opinion, I don't see a reason why. But those who are doing what they have to do as a duty or as a responsibility, they should not be immune because, I mean, it doesn't make sense, you know. But again, there was no real discussion in the parliament. It was just a law passed in less than hours, and most of the parliamentarians, they were not aware about it.
Instead of watching the performance of the executive branch, the Egyptian parliament seems to back every decision taken by the president and his cabinet. How do you explain that?
Well, honestly, the way the parliament was structured from the very beginning, it was meant to be a kind of, let's say, a support institutions to the executive power. So we don't see any real practice of real parliamentarian works, accountability, questioning, holding responsibility for whoever in the government. We don't see this happening now. Of course, they have justifications that the country is under threat and this conspiracy and terrorism. So, you know, they are justifying that there is no time for having the parliamentarians to use the responsibility where most of Egyptians were expecting to see, that they speak for them, that they hold the government accountable. So I personally don't expect much from this parliament, same as many Egyptians, they don't see that the parliament speaks for them. They believe that the parliament speaks for the government.
Mohamed Anwar al-Sadat is the former head of Parliament's Human Rights Committee. He spoke with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawy. Shops and banks closed today in Timbuktu as protesters fired shots in the air and burned vehicles in the latest violence to hit Mali ahead of Sunday's presidential election. Amid growing safety concerns in the region, Arab youths claim they are mistreated by security forces. No casualties were reported, but Reuters reported the mayor called the situation deplorable. Armed groups who claim to represent a variety of quarreling communities took over parts of the north in 2012. French forces intervened and pushed them back, but scattered attacks have continued. The United Nations says nearly 300 civilians have been killed so far this year in communal violence. The airport in the capital of Mopti State was hit by shelling Sunday night. No injuries were reported. A branch of al-Qaeda set off a car bomb at the headquarters of a new West African counter-terror force late last month, killing five people. Hundreds of schools have closed due to security fears, and the election may not be held in some parts of the country. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Solly coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Wagner Roberts, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Solly, host of Straight Talk Africa. The Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African music mix on The Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African music mix plays only the best. Yes, sir. Two Face.
NATO C. Hey. Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT. Every day, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Butte, host of Voice of America's Daybreak Africa. Join me Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC for the latest in African news, features, and sports. We are also available on the internet at www.voaafrica.com. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show on the Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.